real life
superpowers.
You want to build something because it's very difficult, and when it's easy, it's very boring, and you want to do something else. I'm a mountaineer, and something that you know that every time that you go to a new high or a new peak, there is a bigger or there is another peak that you can conquer.
Welcome to Real Life Superpowers. Noah Eshed here, co-hosting with Ronen Manipaz. I'm excited to introduce our guest, Shmuel Mizrahi Ginat. He's an entrepreneur and venture capital investor with deep expertise in business development, capital raising, investments, and M&As. Shmuel has helped raise close to $100 million for over 80 startups and has personally invested in 17 Israeli startups. He is the founder of Crowd Nino, a holding company with ventures in P2P lending, secondary markets, crowdfunding, and more. He's also founded Eve, an investment banking firm specializing in M&As, guiding startups through capital growth and regulatory changes. Let's welcome him to the show.
Real life
superpowers. Superpowers.
Shmuel, hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hey.
Thank you for inviting. Thank you.
How are you these days?
Hey, I'm good. I'm in a new project, so very busy. And after a long time now, it's been a year that I'm back in Israel. So I'm get back and settle down again.
Okay, explain all of that. So let's start with where are you returning from, and then what's that project?
Okay, so in the last 3 years, I've been in Poland, in Warsaw. I opened over there a full company, everything under the KNF. It's the supervisor authority, like Rashut Ne'erot Erech over here in Israel. Full company. One license, operate from Portugal to Poland, pan-European, 3 year project, everything is financial, and it was excited.
What's the purpose of this initiation?
So it's for a platform under the regulation. One of them is P2P. It's a lending between people. The other one is a secondary market. The third one is equity crowdfunding, and the fourth one is a debt fund of 30 million. That what was in our vision, two lines of companies and investor, and we want to bring value to each one of them. So to investor, we bring a lot of other alternative way to invest, and for company, other an alternative way to financial themselves.
Why Poland?
Why Poland? In 2021, I worked here with a lot of Israeli company, and I took a few of them to an IPO. And in one of the search for one company, I found Poland. It's the fifth biggest economy in Europe, 41 million people. It's European slot. That Poland attracted a lot of other countries. They say, okay, we cannot be the center of Europe, but let's be the center of Eastern Europe, the center of the CE. So they attract Hungary and Czech and Estonia and a lot of other countries. A lot of money, a lot of international company over there, cheap cost, a lot of found from the EU. The EU invest more than 75 billion euro in the last 7 years in Poland. And it's a great country. So I found Poland and I loved and moved over there.
And you said we. So who is we?
We. I work a lot of times with partners. So from here, we was three entrepreneurs, three Israeli. We found another three Polish entrepreneurs, and we established the company together with them. From here, I took one of my partners was Shlomo Pargament. He was a VP in Bank Leumi in 2017. A lot of connection, a lot of knowledge. He established Leumi in Romania back in the 90s. And because we are a financial company, we need someone with the financial name and knowledge and connection. So he was one of my partners.
And the idea here basically is to form a structure that will help entrepreneurs overcome all these hurdles, whether regulatory or other sort of business hurdles, with you helping them based on your experience. Is this the idea?
The idea is something like that, is to democratize the financial way and to give another alternative to company and to investor to do something with their money. So we check the company, we do the due diligence of the company, and then we can offer it to the public to invest inside. In a secondary market is company that not under the exchange stock market, but the people over there, the shareholder over there want to dilute themselves. So in Israel, it's something that is not possible yet, but in Europe, it's something that with a license, you can do it. And it's like a marketplace of company that everyone can say, I want to share my shares. This is great for the economy because some investor that invest $100,000 in a company and want after 2 years to dilute themselves and invest in another company, sometimes they cannot do it. And they're stuck in the company until there is a secondary event or IPO or exit. In this platform, we can do it much faster to those investors and to bring new money to new companies.
And then you were saying that this was after helping IPOs make happen and all these other forms of climax for businesses. So how did that happen? Like, what's your background?
Okay, so a little bit about myself. And my what I did until now. So in 2011, I released my duty in the army as a captain, and I started my degree. Over there, I met my first partner. She's the love of my life. Something that I don't know to explain. Someone that know how to complete the F of me. And we established a company, we called it Blue Box. After 10 months, we sold the company, we sold some contract that we have in the company. We established another company named Thesis, that helps students in west of Europe.
Wait, helps them in what way?
It was a lot of students back in 2016, 2015, that a lot of students from Eastern, they started to learn in Eastern Europe. Standard paying, I don't know, 1,000 euro and live in Berlin, they prefer to pay 300 euro and live in Hungary or Debrecen or Budapest, or other country like in Czech. The study are in the same, let's say, standard. If back in the 90s, the study in East Europe was to give to the teacher a bottle of whiskey and get a degree, it changed. And we saw a lot of people that come to those countries and they need help. Because the education over there, it's in English and it's free and very low price or everything. But people that 18 years learn only in German or in Italy or in France, those countries that speak only this language, it's very hard to them. And we build a platform that can connect between students and help them to succeed the university. Later on, we saw this company again with a lot of data of something like 20,000 students in from west that came to the east of Europe. And then I became an investor, and I invest in 17 Israeli company. I did a lot of mistake. I lose a lot of money. But I start to work with other company on BizDev, and I work with 80 company. This was in 2020, 2021. And I raised with 80 company around 300 million shekel. As I say, to those company I took to IPO in Tel Aviv Exchange market. One of them was success IPO. The other one, they didn't succeed to raise their money in the pre-IPO. So it was not so good.
So there's a lot to unpack here, but I want to go back a minute because you were talking about fresh out of the army, setting up a company with a co-founder that, if I understand correctly, you have pretty much just met, but there was good chemistry. And 10 months in, you were already able to sell it, which sounds almost sci-fi because you had zero experience in business, and 10 months is very quick. So what's the secret there?
I think that the secret in everything is time and location. We saw a gap. In the same days, IDF changed their way to untake pain from aircrafts. Okay, and the American or the American army changed the way, and the Israeli followed the American. And we saw that the new materials that come from the United States, it's very expensive, and that we can reach it in Europe. So this is what we did.
How did you know?
How did we know? My partner, Shelly, my former partner, she left the IDF a few months before. And this was to jump on the opportunity, is to see a gap, to say, okay, what I can do from this gap. We joined to another company over here in Israel that they have the clearance to be in IDF bids. So they give us the interway to go over there. And we sign only on contract.
But why do they trust you?
Because we show them what we know and why we're going to do it in a different way and why this is a good way for our opinion. It was to go to everyone that want to hear something, and they believed in us.
You seem very creative and, in a way, a problem solver, like consistently. Is that something that was always right about you or something that evolved?
I think this is my gift, to look on things in a different way, to look in a creative way on things. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good, I must admit. Sometimes to go against the flow, it's not good enough. But to look on things in the different angle and to look on things in a different way and to ask the question, why this is good or what we can do to make it better. And this is something that in every project that I took part of, and I've been in a lot of other ventures over here in Israel, some of them not succeed to and we need to close them after a few months, some of them after a few years. But everything, all the time, I was the one with the different look on, or to give the different angle of the things.
So let's say your model. So you take companies to IPOs, right? So what would a company need to go to an IPO? Like, what company is a good IPO for you? Like, you say, listen, these guys have to go to IPO. They will be very successful there.
This is something that no one knows.
You should.
No, I advise them how to do the process, how to do the IPO, how many shares they need to give in this process, how much money to raise, and how to write the tashkif.
How do you diligence the candidate?
I can tell you that in the last year, I saw around 10,000 startups in Israel and in Poland, and a good team all the time, it's a good company. Or a good team that not a first-timer, it's a company that you can say, okay, it's something that interesting and they can involve. It's very depends because company that want to go to IPO, we need to understand what is the market of them. Okay, some of the company that came to me, I told them, listen, don't go to Tel Aviv Stock Exchange. Go to Spain. Go to German, to Berlin Stock Exchange because you are in materials and you are not a tech or your client's not in Israel. It very depends. Why company want to do an IPO? Because they need money. And this is a way to raise the money.
Yeah, but again, you do your job, right? You saw 10,000 companies. I'm sure you didn't IPO 10,000 of them, right? You chose a few, okay? So why did you choose those few?
They choose me. I don't know.
So you offered 10,000 people and only a few chose you?
I probably saw 10,000 companies because I was in a lot of IC, investment committee, of VC over in Israel and in PeopleBees and in places in Poland, in Caudinho and all over. And people went to me to raise money. And they say, okay, this is my venture. I want to raise 1 million, 2 million, 3 million. And in those IC, in those investment committee, we saw sometimes 20 companies a day for 30 minutes that everyone, it's like in the shark tank, that everyone came, do the pitch and say, why to choose them? And you need to say why this is a good company and why I want to invest, or even to start a due diligence process that take a lot of your time, money, offer, and so on, and to say, okay, after this speech of 20 minutes, I want to dig in and to say if there is someone real in the company and check it more deeply. I can say that less than 0.1% of the company that I saw, I invest or the group invest in. A lot of people back in 2020 after the corona, it was a lot of money in the street. And a lot of people came and say, hey, I have an idea and I want to raise money. Because a lot of companies raise a lot of money. So sometimes you see entrepreneur that came to you and 20 days later he came with another idea.
So what do you look for?
I believe in people. And I want to see the chemistry between the people inside of the venture. Because if the people know how to work together, they can do a pivot. They can work in struggles. And every entrepreneur or every startup is unknown field with a lot of places that sometimes it's like a roller coaster train that you're very happy in the morning, very sad in the evening, very tired, very action. And the team, the core team, need to support one each other. And if they know to do it, so 90% of other teams will be good or will manage. By the way, this is something that I'm doing in the last year that I came to a lot of company and I was the negotiator between the co-founder to come and see what's wrong, how they can start talk together and what need to be done.
Do you mean through conflict resolution?
Yeah. When the war started over, it was a mess. A lot of companies start up that one of the founder is back in Gaza or something, and the company need him and relied on him. Then I saw a lot of co-founders that came, you know, we have a fight between them. Hey, you cannot support me. I'm doing everything alone. I don't care from everything. Or investor that came to me and say, listen, we have some break between the company, between the management to us because that something happened. And we need someone to negotiate and see how to manage this gap. So I believe in people, and this is what I'm looking in startup that I invest.
Okay, so you said that people, you believe in people, and that it would be actually better if people won't be first timers. What makes person a second timer?
Second timers, it means that they already work together. Those people can know each other for 20 years. Previous knowledge is good enough for me. If it's your first partner and this is the first venture that you are doing together, so the relationship is very low, and it's can be opening to a lot of problems in the future. I wrote a post a few months ago, what is important in your co-partner when you look for a co-partner in your venture? If it's more important, chemistry, or someone that have the knowledge or something. And the chemistry, it's must be there. You want to work with your co-partner that you can sit in the end of the day and drink a beer, that you want to call him and ask for advice. You need to remember that as the venture grow up, the CEO or the entrepreneur, the founder of the company is very alone. You cannot call his investor and tell them, I have some struggles that I need to do. He cannot work with his C-level and ask and tell them about the struggles of the company. So a lot of the times he's alone. And those co-partner, if you work together, is the only one that can work with you and give you this support.
Why not call the investor, by the way? I think we're seeing a lot of investors who are, you know, very much active partners there in many ways to be the trusted advisor to the founders.
I'm in this approach to work with the investor and to talk with them, and you bring them to the company, so you need them. So use them.
Yeah, but you can't use them for, I get what you're saying. You can't use them for everything. It's a negative. There's interest. Okay. So like even in a VC, okay, a VC wants an exit strategy and maybe the price isn't enough for the founder. And he also promised stuff to the employees, and which is against what the, so the decision-making is also prioritizing. You can't be openly, like it's not an honesty thing. It's a loan because at the end of the day, every decision that he makes, there is collateral on what happens in the in other positions. So taking for as much advice as you can, but at the end of the day, someone made it's a decision. He's the day-to-day guy. I totally understand what you're saying. It doesn't even mean lying. It really means just prioritizing your decisions. You take information from an investor. You take information from yourself. Like, what you're saying about the co-founder is this. The only interest that is aligned is with the co-founder, because he's the person who has the same interest as you have. That's not always right as well, but
sometimes in the board, you want to build a coalitions. Sometimes you can see that the political or our way in political way in boardrooms that you want to build your coalition and to say, okay, I have 65%, so I can offer this or not. So you need the people and you want to advise with them and so on, but you cannot do everything with them. And this gives you the position of to be very alone in your position.
So you were involved in 17 startups, and you were saying you made so many mistakes and lost money and learned so much. So let's talk about some of the major and large and the most key insights that you have from these experiences.
Oof. I gave trust in a lot of people on things that they say to me, that I was young and I don't know. In the beginning, when I get the first money, big money, and I say, okay, what I'm going to do now? And I say, I'm young. I want to invest in an early stage company. So I did a very low due diligence because I wanted to save money. And some company that came to me after a few months and say, okay, we need a second round. I said no, because I look on the value of the of the shekel. He said, okay, if half of a million gave me 10%, why now half of a million give me 6%? This is a big inflation. But later on, I learned to look on the risk and to do the risk management. So if a company come to me in the second time, I know the management and I know that they have their milestone and this is a good company and I want to invest more. So this is, was one of the mistakes that I lose a position in a few companies because when they came back, I said, okay, I don't want to go to this round. So they dilute myself, they dilute me in a bigger round. So suddenly I didn't find my position in the board over there. So I cannot take any decision. I cannot help the company. And those kind of mistakes that I did.
But you were young and you had a significant amount of money, which you decided to go and invest in early stage startups. And yet you were trying to mitigate risk. But, you know, there are much more, much safer ways to invest your money than early stage startups, which clearly we're all aware of the success rates of startups. So you still were pulled towards that direction, which is interesting.
I really believe that my generation will get to the age of 100, and no government can support us because we're going to be 30 years in pension, and we need to invest. And I look at myself and I say, okay, I'm very young. I work something like 7 years before because I finished the army only in the age of 24, and say, okay, I have more years to work than here that I'm alive. So I want to take a big risk with this knowledge.
We're excited to be collaborating with the Israeli website CTech, owned by Kalkalist, Israel's leading business newspaper. CTech is the gateway of the Israeli high tech to the tech world and vice versa. If you're not already a regular reader, we strongly recommend that you check out kalkalistech.com, C-A-L-C-A-L-I-S-T-E-C-H.com, to stay up to date on all high-impact stories from the Israeli tech scene.
Wait. Let's talk about this for a second. 1 second.
Okay.
You're saying something. You say, okay, medicine's better. We're evolving. We're going to live till 100, right? Pension is, at least, locally, I know it's since till 67, right? In most fields, you can work till the age of 67. Okay. That means what you're saying is there's about 33 years, okay, of pension, which is not calculated today. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It is calculated. You only start getting the pension.
Yeah. But what he's saying is at the end of the day, the death rate, let's say 20 years ago, okay, the average was, I don't know, I have no idea the number. It was much lower.
I think because it was 70, around 70.
I don't know. But now it's 30 years more. Now, all the economics around that hasn't taken into account, correct me if I'm wrong, is this what you're saying? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't take into calculation that there's another 30 years inside pension, meaning when you're putting aside on pension, won't be enough. For example, let's say your pension is going to be right now $1,000. 20 years ago would be enough to live and whatever. And now the $1,000 would actually not help you live. And it will actually, what you're saying is the financial system will be bankrupt because of this, right? Because they're hedging wrong. Okay, so
yeah.
I have two questions out of that.
I can give you even the number.
Please do.
Let's say that if today someone in the age of 70 needs $2 million for his pension, okay? We need 10 million because 2 million can give you or provide you enough money to 8 years of living. But after 8 years, this is finished. We're going to be 30 years needed to support by this money. So it's not 10, it's not 2 million, it's 10 million. And to have a saving of 10 million, it's very hard to get. And you need to start it in a very early age or young age to do it. Now, countries understand it. This is why they have alternative and they think in what to do with the money or how to invest money and so on. But we cannot rely on government in this issue because even then, even if the government can support us, So you can see what people get in today, 1,000 shekel of the pension, the living.
Like $250, $300. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you could still invest in things that are more, that statistically you have a higher chance of you know, making money out of than.
Yeah, but no, that's what he's saying. He's saying, listen, once upon a time, we could have went through the government. Okay.
Not the government.
But this is how the world works. The world works. We wait for the pension funds, and we live off pension funds.
No, I'm beyond that. I'm asking as a young person who understood. I'm not counting on my country to provide for me after when I'm at a certain age. All
right. Right.
Then he said, "All right, let's invest in several amount of startups, knowing the risk, because the upside, the potential upside."
But I want to add something. It's very important to spread the risk, okay?
Right.
Not invest only in early stage, not invest only in real estate, not invest only in the stock exchange.
So did you?
Yes.
How would you build the portfolio, okay? So we got the pension on one side. We'll still continue with the pension. What else?
We bought a house, okay? So I said, okay, some of this is going to be for 30 years of mortgage now, but this is my real estate secured, okay?
Real estate.
Another, some of the money is in S&P, and there is a broker house that manages this money. But some of the money went to an early stage.
Stocks, solid stocks, okay.
Yeah, but I want to say to although everything, I'm still happy. And it's meant that the statistic, it's in, I'm good in the statistic, okay? 17 company, I can say that 80% of them are not good company. Some of them even close the company and go chapter 11 and so on. But this, again, my thought to spread the risk. I didn't put my all money in one company.
And is the 20% worth more than the other 80?
I think today, in 5 years, looking back, it's more or less the same.
More or less. So it's a break even.
Yeah.
Let's say.
Yeah. But I have the year that will come. The next year.
Right. So we're talking about 70 companies. It doesn't really equal. So it's like about 3.5 companies, meaning let's go for 4. So 4 companies were okay. The rest were not. And then you're break even. But now I'm asking you this. So there's 4 companies that are okay. That means those 4 companies continue on next year with you, correct? Okay. Yeah. It doesn't mean they exited, right? So,
yeah.
So your break even right now, okay, on the evaluation, is that correct to say?
Yes, you can say it like this. They are not a public company, so I cannot take the money from the so. But the average between a seed company to an IPO, it's 7 years.
And okay, and here's the predicament. So if you know how to take them to your IPOs, and probably because it's very liquid, meaning one of the advantages of an IPO as an investor is at the end of the day, the stocks are worth money or easier to liquidate if wanted, as opposed to not having them in an IPO.
It's what is the benefit of the company? To be under the stock exchange, there is a lot of cost to be there, okay?
Right.
It's around 600,000 shekel only to be a member that you can trade your stock over there. Sometimes small companies say, okay, I don't want to earn my profits and I don't need to be over there. And add that the regulation on you that you need to say everything, and everything is very public. And all your financial report and everything is on the table. Some companies don't want to be there. And if it's not for the benefits of the company, you don't take them to an IPO because this is sexy or this is a way to have money to the company. There is other way to finance the company.
So what companies did you take to an IPO?
One of them, it's called PeopleBees. PeopleBees, it's a company of crowdfunding platform. It was the first one and the biggest one over here in Israel. One in the company that I invest was PeopleBees. Invest in the platform itself in 2018. And I really like the idea of democracy investment, to give to everyone the opportunity to invest in a company that he believes in, not only for angel and not only big investors. During 2020, the company did very well and raised a lot of money, and also in 2021, on the first half of 2021, and the board decided to go to an IPO.
Where?
In Tel Aviv. In Tel Aviv, the company tried to raise $50 million as a pre-IPO. I did the whole prospect and everything until the roadshow. In the roadshow, I took a step back and gave the CEO of the company to do the roadshow with the CFO of the company. They didn't succeed to raise the $50 million as they asked. And the board decided to postpone the IPO to 2022. To see if the financial report going to be as they expected, and then to try again. And then it settled down and everything stopped over there.
Yeah, so but that's like a classic, people don't understand that in the corona, it was one of the most successful periods to most businesses, except for, you know, except for tourism and flights, everything boomed. So they had a run. That was 2022 was with the maturity of the business, seeing what its real potential is. Right? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
And would you say this? Okay. So my question is this: when you say road shows, okay, so this is like in Tel Aviv, but when you say a road show for materials in Germany, okay, one of the problems that, you know, even if I'm a U.S. company and I want to go to Poland, I don't know any Polish investment bankings, right? I don't know how to do the road show itself. I for sure don't know, but they probably don't know what the multiplier is for, you know, materials in Germany, as opposed to other places. Is that something that like you go through all the time with them? Do you have all those contacts in those countries? How do you make those contacts?
Okay, so this is exactly what I'm doing today. I establish with partner, Eve. And Eve, this is investment banking, that I'm bringing my knowledge and connection and network how to do this process. When I established Caudinio in Poland, I knew no one, but I started to make my network over there and start to find people. And it took me a while.
How? Okay,
it's not something. How? Searching in Google, connection with an Israeli group of Israeli in Warsaw. I found a guy over there, Israeli guy that lived 10 years, and he told me, listen, this is the accountant that you need, and this is the lawyer that you need, and this is everything that you need to know. And I start from there. And after a few months, I say, okay, this accountant is not good for me because he speaks only Polish and he don't see a startup. So I found another one. But over there, I've been a few months and I knew what I'm looking for. You start very slowly and you put your seed in one place and wait, and it's take a time, it's take a while. This is today, when I say I'm doing it for a company, it took me 3 years or 4 years to make my network in Europe. And today I know to do it very, very easy. And I think this is the benefit, because today I'm doing it to a few companies. So I'm not alone. In the first time, when I did it the first time, it was my first time, and I didn't know even. So I took mentors. I asked a lot of people that sit with me in a board, hey, listen, you've been aboard a few years, how you build your network? I get great tips over there. that I stand up sitting alone in the hotel every night to say in every meeting, to finish every meeting with, hey, I'm going to be in the town this week. If you know anyone that wants to sit with me, please connect between us. Sometimes I sit with people that don't speak English and they didn't understand what they're doing in the table. And sometimes I met people that told me how it's to be a young boy in Poland under the communism and what is the difference today. And because that we are a Polish company, it's great to know the landscape, right? Let's right. call it like this. Because later on, when was the election in last October over there, you knew what's going to be. You know what is the wind over there and if it's going to be another grants from the EU or not. What is the government or the governmental position on investment or new thinking. But those dinner gave me not only to be not to be alone in the hotel in the evening, but gave me a lot of other connection and network.
So how many hours of meetings did it take to you become a Polish expert?
I don't know.
Like a Beatles question. How many meetings till you felt like you're confident enough to say, listen, I understand this market.
I don't think that there is enough. I'm outside of the market, but this is good because I'm bringing a new position. And I say that I love to bring the new idea or the different way. So this is good that I'm not inside of it. But on the day that I saw someone send me on LinkedIn, a CEO of a Polish company, that sent me a message in LinkedIn, and I saw that we have 49 Metro Alfred. And it was after a few months over there, and I said, okay, I'm building a good network. This is the way to build a network.
It sounds like you're in no way afraid to roll up your sleeves and to hustle. And it even sounds like you're searching for it. Like it seems, I think once you feel like this is you sort of achieved this goal and you're happy enough with your network, you're probably going to roll up your sleeves and hustle and do something else, right?
First of all, I'm afraid all the time. One of my goals is to go for my comfort zone. So this is a goal that I put to myself, to go outside and try new things. But there is a way, there is a quote on entrepreneur. When it's very easy, it's very boring for us. And when everything is very difficult, we want to build we want to build something because it's very difficult. And when it's easy, it's very boring and we want to do something else. I'm a mountaineer, and something that you know that every time that you go to a new high or a new peak, there is a bigger or there is another peak that you can conquer. So this is like this in real time, in real life.
What started before, climbing or being an entrepreneur?
Entrepreneur.
Yeah?
From the age of 8 or 9 to sell popcorn in the Klezmerim in Tzfat, to make bags of popcorn and to sell it during the Klezmerim festival in Tzfat, in the old city.
Who was your mentor? Because you had to look up to somebody to be able to think of these things.
I think my father was my first mentor, but all the time I'm looking for new.
Why is he an entrepreneur?
He's kind of entrepreneur, but he knew how to do a different way of business. And this is something that I really believe, that the way that he do the business, it's in a calm and harmonic way that you don't want to fight with anyone. You want to go together. That if you're going to do something together with someone else, you can achieve more than 1 + 1 = 3. This is a way that my father looked all the time in business. How we can achieve from when you join to someone, how we can achieve much more from only to be with someone else.
And is that something that he taught you from a young age?
I think so, yeah.
Did he encourage you to find sort of an old-fashioned job? Was he guiding you towards a specific direction in life?
No. My parents gave us everything that we need and go everywhere that you want. Do whatever that do you good for you.
Do you feel that gave you courage?
I don't know if courage more as the knowledge that you have a nest to go back. So courage is a different thing, okay, to take some risk. Whatever it's without taking the risk sometimes or to do things that you know that you have the family support and you can do whatever that you want and the family going to be there.
And is that something that, you know, that walking around with that knowledge in life, do you feel that that is something that enabled you to stay open-minded and explore?
It's give you some confidence to do so, yeah. It gives you some confidence to take risk sometimes, or to look some things in a different angle because you know that everything going to be okay. If not, you can always go back and start from the beginning.
And what are you doing these days to make sure that you're out of your comfort zone?
I've been in a dinner a few weeks ago with 15 other people in the age of 35 to 65 that I didn't know any one of them, going to a dinner together.
Random people?
Random
so
people.
So you just saw people at dinner and you just sat down?
No. It's a it's a Facebook group
that you can join
to random people for a dinner. Every weekend, it's a different people. You need to bring something with you, and that's it.
Okay, who are these people?
Something that was common to all of us, everyone is from the gay community in the age of 35 to 65.
Amazing.
It was a mind-blowing. It's not my comfort zone, let's say it like this. But it was good. It was very nice. Before
very
that,
cool.
I went to a conference.
So you're like you're like the biz dev bug. Like you have a biz dev bug, meaning you know you're always it's trying to be the steroids of your life. I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
What would you say your superpower is?
I think my superpower is to see the other one in the table. It's mean that when I'm doing negotiation between people, I can fit myself to the other one position and try to understand not only why doing what it is doing, but what is the circumstances that bring him over there, that brought you him to this point. And
that's called practical empathy.
Yeah,
it's a lot of question and to understand and to try to find the motivation of the other side, what motivate him. And by understanding the other side, it's very easy to me to combine between people or to make people work together or to show them why it's good for them to work together.
There was a former negotiator in the FBI that was here on the podcast. He helps people with negotiations in business now.
Derek Gaunt.
What?
Derek Gaunt.
Derek Gaunt. And he said
partner.
He said this.
So that's Chris. So he's his partner from Black Swan.
So he says this. He says the difference between empathy and practical empathy is this. Empathy is when you put yourself in someone else's shoes. Now, as a hostage negotiator, he doesn't want to do that. You don't want to feel what he feels. So he calls it practical empathy, meaning all he does is see it from his perspective without being in his shoes, right? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, but it's to understand why you are doing what you're doing. What is your motivation and what is drive you to do your stuff? And when you see it in negotiation, when you want to raise money or you're going to a meeting with investor, when you understand why you want to invest in you sometime, it's very easy. Because sometimes your company is something in his puzzle. Sometimes your company is something that is want to do for a very long time, but he cannot do it. Or the investor, and when you know it, it's very easy to go to the other side and tell him, let's work together. I know what I can complete in your side and you can complete my side.
Because you have the clarity.
Yeah.
And what would you say your kryptonite is, your weakness?
Boring.
Sorry?
Bored.
Boredom.
Boredom. Yeah, when it starts to be boring for me, I'm not there. I'm not there. I need the action.
The thrill.
Yeah.
All right, Shmuel, we wish you to keep the thrill and to keep this great vibe. And it seems like you're very motivated to help people. So we wish you to keep doing that. And how can people reach out to you if they need all these hurdle overcoming skills and all your knowledge?
LinkedIn, I think this is the best way. This is a... This is my one-page website.
One click.
It's either they go on LinkedIn or they just meet you randomly.
At a dinner.
In different content. Or in an exhibition or a mountain or whatever. Which I think is amazing.
So in LinkedIn, if I'm going somewhere, it's going to be at LinkedIn. Or you can find everything over there.
Amazing.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That's all for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider subscribing to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Also, if you have a moment, we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review our podcast on the platform you're listening to. This will help others find our show. And as always, if you know anyone who you think would enjoy our podcast, please share it with them. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back as usual on the 1st of the month.
Real life
superpowers.
Up in the sky, it's a bird,
it's a plane.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology.
It's alive!
Real life
superpowers.